The Service to America medals honor federal employees who go above and beyond their job descriptions to serve the public. For the next few months, Federal News Radio is speaking to finalists. A colleague describes him as the world's leading expert on drug addiction treatment and prevention. As the deputy director of the State Department's anti-crime programs, Tom Brown has helped shape drug treatment in 70 countries, and now he's a finalist in the career achievement category. And he joins us now. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
We understand from your bio that you grew up in a high-crime neighborhood in Brooklyn. Was this something that impacted your career choice later on?
Yeah, it had a very big impact in my career. I've had family members that, you know, have worked in the New York City Police Department, and many of us have studied criminal justice.
All right, so tell us about the work you do, because you don't normally think of the State Department as being involved in drug prevention and addiction issues.
No, I work for a specialized bureau, the Bureau of National Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs and State Department. And the job that I have is to develop prevention and treatment programs in various countries around the world. So to date, we've worked in about 70 countries.
And how did you yourself make the jump? You said you had family in the NYPD, and then to do something internationally.
Well, I went to school at Maryland down here, and they gave me an opportunity to work with internships in the U.S. government, and I was able to work with the Drug Enforcement Administration, and from there I met people at the U.S. Department of State who recruited me to make the jump to U.S. State Department to use some of the experience that I had to develop programs globally.
Now, again, reading your award documents, that you had an idea before it kind of caught on widely that there might be a better approach than what was extant, say, 25, 30 years ago when treating people with drug addictions. It was treated more criminally, perhaps, than you thought might be a better way.
In the United States, basically, the United States developed, I guess, the first treatment system. So we've got about 40, 50 years with it. And the United States, you know, developed to a point where addiction was viewed as a disease and take a public health approach to it. And, you know, and that's the concept that we use in the international setting.
Well, compare it to how do other countries, I'm sure there's no one standard, but how did other countries view it?
When I first started out, a lot of countries were taking a very hardline approach to treatment. They were using techniques such as punishment techniques that did not work. They were putting people in boot camps as opposed to community-based programs. They weren't conducting therapy. It was all work and all marching, you know, and all discipline. And they weren't using any science-based psychoeducational techniques. So it took quite a time to develop a team, you know, to go teach all these countries different ways of doing treatment correctly.
And, of course, other countries have very different approaches to drug laws than the United States. How do you convince other countries that we've got a better way or something they should try?
Well, what we do is we work with them where they're at. You know what I mean? We go to another country. We introduce techniques to them because most time we go in, they ask us to come in because they've got a serious problem and what they're doing is not working. And what I often like to do is if there's a neighboring country nearby which we worked in, we'll have to take them on study tours to that country to view other countries where we work, where those countries have culturally adapted what we have done. And it gives them confidence, you know, to accept some of the ideas that we'd like to help them with.
So to give us a case study, I mean, what is one of the countries that you'd like to take people to?
What I like to do is one of the biggest challenges we had was developing a treatment system in Afghanistan. You know, you're talking a country that came out of 30 years of war. They had one of the highest addiction rates in the world. It was very challenging because 60% of all drug users in that country are women and children under the age of 12 years old. And in order to help develop civil society there, we had to develop treatment systems to counter the drug addiction they had, which is affecting their national security, their public health. So to gain their trust, countries like Malaysia and Indonesia worked with us, where we took them on study tours to these countries to see how these Islamic countries work with us to develop their own treatment systems, and that gained their confidence. And then we went into Afghanistan with some international partners, with Malaysians, Singaporeans, and teams that we had, and therefore we gained the trust of a lot of key leaders throughout Afghanistan, village leaders, tribal elders, mullahs. So in this way, taking them to countries where we had worked before and then seeing the results that the country had working with us, they gained more confidence in us.
And describe what Afghanistan's situation is now.
Okay, well, the situation situation. We got done doing some sophisticated drug studies, and basically Afghanistan has the highest drug prevalence rate throughout the world. Most countries, maybe a serious prevalence rate is 5% of the population using drugs. They have anywhere now between 10 to 14% using it. It's the highest rate of addiction amongst women that we have seen, and we've also documented the first instances worldwide of child drug addiction since birth. We're talking about kids 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, because in the country there, opium has been used as medicine over the years, and parents give it to kids for to calm them down, for babysitting methods. The kids live in small homes that are not ventilated, and they inhale the opium smoke that the parents that the parents smoke. And so the youngest age we had seen before was, say, was 12 to 14 years old. But about 3-4 years ago, we found the first instances of, we were talking about children actively using drugs at 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, and treatment protocols had never been developed for them. So we had to put an international team together with the United Nations, the World Health Organization, some of the leading medical universities such as Johns Hopkins and University of North Carolina to develop the first protocols for treating child addiction.
We're speaking with Tom Brown. He's Deputy Director of the Office of Anti-Crime Programs in the State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, and also a finalist in this year's Service to America medals. So in those countries, I guess, how far upstream culturally do you have to go? That is to say, did the people there that were addicted, especially these women and children, know they were addicted in the first place?
Yes. When we went to Afghanistan, say in February 2002, we brought them to Malaysia, and one of the first things they spoke to us about was the problems they had with drug addiction. They recognized that they had that problem, and we were kind of surprised to hear that, because they were talking about problems with unemployment, with insecurity due to war, you know, to various mental health and medical problems, not having enough hospitals, schools. But one of the dominating themes that they kept telling us was they've got this problem with drug use and didn't know what to do with it.
And so you mentioned that you helped develop some protocols, the first ever for children who have drug addiction. Is part of the State Department's plan now to sort of export those or promote those in other places where you've worked?
Yes, we've seen, because of the amount of opium and heroin produced in Afghanistan, it spread to neighboring countries, India, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. And street children like 7, 8 years old that traditionally use painkillers and glues are now using heroin. We've also seen this problem, unfortunately, in Latin America. We have 7, 8-year-old street children switching from painkillers and glues to smoking crack cocaine in places like Brazil and Paraguay. And so we have a global program where we're taking the protocols that we have and adapting to different countries. One of the most important things that we do is, like, because we're spending U.S. taxpayer dollars in a foreign environment, it's very important that we use that money widely, that we use that money wisely. And one thing that Secretary Kerry would like us to do, any opportunity we have, what we develop overseas, if it could also benefit the United States, to look for those opportunities. And a lot of the programs we developed, especially for women, because in addition to treating the child, you have to treat the mother that has a drug addiction too. And in the United States, though, we pioneered treatment for women. We never developed the actual training manuals for it. People had learned on the job, but there wasn't no formalized training courses. So as part of the child addiction protocols, we developed a 10-course series for women to deal with the addiction problems that the mother has. And in addition to pioneering these in, say, in 9 other countries worldwide, they were helped develop for us by a panel of women treatment experts inside the United States. So now we can take these 10 manuals and use them inside the United States also, in addition to use them anywhere else around the world.
So what kind of interagency work is required for doing this in the United States that you found from your base at the State Department?
In order to accomplish the work that we do in an international setting, you know, we work with the Office of National Drug Control Policy. We interact with the National Institute on Drug Abuse. We also have some international partners, like the international partners we would have are international organizations such as United Nations, the Organization of American States, the Colombo Plan. We have some very dynamic NGOs worldwide who we work with that conduct prevention and treatment programs. And in some countries over the years, we've had some very highly talented ministers of health and ministers of counter-narcotics. So we have to put a multidimensional team together to be able to work the issue.
And I want to ask you, because you've worked at the DEA and you have family who worked at the local level on these issues, from your international research and studies, is there anything that the United States can take away from it about our own drug addiction problems?
In the treatment field, there's an old saying, you can't keep it unless you give it away. And what the U.S. has done, the U.S. over the last 50 years, you know, has developed the concept of substance abuse treatment and taken it to new levels. And so what we do is we're able to take this and export this worldwide. You know what I mean? And we work in different settings, so we can see maybe, you know, concepts that we use in the U.S., how they work in an international environment. And some of these countries, they will take techniques that we taught them, and they will, you know, put their own cultural spin on them. And sometimes we see, you know, some approaches that they take that, hey, maybe we could use this back home over here. They seem to have success with that. You know, this is cooperation is a two-way street.
All right, so now you're a SAMI's finalist. How'd that hit you when you found out?
Well, I was very surprised that they had nominated me, and I was very appreciative of my immediate supervisors in my front office in the Bureau of National Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs for nominating me for this, because I work in a department, the U.S. State Department, which is a very large agency, and basically we have thousands of employees that span the globe, many working in areas of conflict in very difficult regions, and they're accomplishing great things. And to be one of two State Department employees to be nominated among the thousands of, like, talented people we have is actually a privilege.